there has been considerable talk in the mainstream media about Israel's planned disengagement from the Gaza Strip. Some see this as an important step in the peace process, allowing the Palestinians some limited form of autonomy over the area. Others think Israel is just posturing to appease the United States and draw attention away from the right of return and what Palestinians are calling the apartheid wall. During the last several weeks, right-wing Israelis have vehemently protested the disengagement, blocking soldiers and creating a good degree of melee. To talk about the disengagement and how it's playing out on the ground in Gaza and in the annals of policy, we've reached journalist John Elmer. Elmer runs the website www.fromoccupiedpalestine.org and is a core contributor to The New Standard. His writings have appeared in the progressive Z magazine, the Journal of Palestinian Studies, and other publications. John Elmer, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
First off, where are you and what is the situation like on the ground?
I'm actually not in Gaza. The Israeli press office is barring journalists from the Palestinian areas of the Gaza Strip right now. I'm in Ramallah in occupied Palestine in the West Bank, but I've been down around Gaza, and I was at the settler demonstration just outside of Gaza the other day, and there's no avoiding the situation here on the ground. There's a campaign going on within Israel itself where people are flying orange flags, orange being the color of the anti-disengagement element within society, and it's got a significant presence, although it must be said that average Israelis definitely don't see the Gaza Strip as an important strategic position where 7,000 Jewish settlers live amongst 1.5 million Palestinians. It's not a popular position for the Israelis. They don't think it's tenable to hold the Gaza Strip with only 7,000 settlers and 1.5 million Palestinians. But as we've seen in the news today, a far-right activist wearing an Israeli Defense Forces uniform carrying an Israeli-issued M16 opened fire on a bus in a Palestinian-Israeli village in northern Israel, killing four Palestinian Israelis before he was beaten to death by a mob. So there is significant radical elements within Israel that are fighting this disengagement, but generally the population supports it.
Well, what sort of tactics have these more radical Zionists been taking on? We've seen in the mainstream, John, that busloads of these people have been barred from actually entering Gaza. So can you talk a little bit about the tactics they've taken on, the rhetoric that they're putting out, and what the Israeli government's doing to deal with them?
Well, the tactics that they're using actually are pretty interesting because they've been mimicking left-wing tactics of the anti-globalization movement. They studied at length previously the tactics used at anti-globalization demonstrations across the world. They're doing sit-ins and protests, blocking streets, blocking access for people, trying to slow traffic, trying to make business as usual difficult on the roads. But the soldiers have been dealing with them with kid gloves, you could say. This is an army that deals with the Palestinian children with live ammunition. More than 600 Palestinian children under the age of 16 have been killed just in the last 5 years alone by Israeli army. Nothing like that is being directed towards the settlers. Their protests are large and vocal, but they represent a tiny minority, I think, within Israeli society. There's one thing people have to remember, that Israel has a people's army. Every single man, woman, and child in the Israeli society is ultimately going to serve in the military. And so people are very worried about having, like they are in North America, and they are in America in particular, in the war in Iraq, they're worried about their sons dying. They're not too concerned about the Palestinian population, but with a people's army, they don't want their sons from Tel Aviv fighting to protect 7,000 settlers living a good life in the Gaza Strip. And so there is some opposition to what's going on. The rhetoric that the settlers are using is incendiary, to say the least. Connections between the Nazis are common. At the demonstration that I was at, slogans, Jews don't expel Jews, was a common one. Of course, it's no problem for Jews to expel Palestinians, but Jews don't expel Jews is a very common line amongst the disengagement protesters. There's been many statements, people speaking up, according to many sources here, in Israel, in Israeli papers, which, by the way, are much more liberal and much more democratic than any press in North America. They're very open, although they have the same corporate constraints as North American press. They're very open with their discussions and their debates, surprisingly open, actually. And there's been many articles about the parallels being made to the Holocaust. Many demonstrators are calling Sharon a war criminal, saying that he's committing crimes against humanity for displacing this Jewish population in the Gaza Strip, which, of course, in and of itself is correct. Sharon is a war criminal, and he should be charged with crimes against humanity, but not for the reason these settlers are saying. You know, Sharon has a career now, 56 years old, of battling the Palestinians in order to have an exclusive Jewish state from the Mediterranean Sea to the River Jordan. He has committed many crimes that would easily put him up in The Hague as a war criminal. But many people at these demonstrations, it's an interesting juxtaposition because these demonstrators, many of them had posters of Sharon behind bars, and many of Sharon's cabinet ministers and pro disengagement, as it's called, many of them behind bars and in cages at the demonstration, which was interesting to see because, as I say, it's accurate, but not for the reasons that they say. Many of the settlers, or some, at least some elements of the settlers, are talking about suicide packs, are talking about fighting the disengagement, but I wouldn't say that that's representative of a large majority of them. I think what you'll find is many of them will take the compensation that's being offered to them, and they'll leave and they'll move off into other settlements in the West Bank. Sharon has been very clear about the reason for this disengagement, that Gaza is untenable. Keeping the Gaza Strip is impossible. And so what he's doing is, in military slang, he's shortening the line. He's reinforcing the settlements in the West Bank, where there's 250,000 settlers in the West Bank living illegally. He's reinforcing those lines and cementing those settlement blocks, as they're called, within the West Bank, and sacrificing Gaza, which is, you know, amongst 1.5 million Palestinians, it's not very, it's not tenable to think that the Israelis will be able to push the Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip. So essentially what they're doing is creating a massive prison, and Gaza's the model for the West Bank and for the wall apparatus, and creating a massive prison where the Palestinians will be set up inside it. These Palestinians will have no freedom of movement between the West Bank or Gaza, and will be simply in a cage where they will have semi-autonomy, however, living within a prison where they cannot have movement to their families elsewhere in the West Bank, and no access to their borders, no access to their airspace, and have a Palestinian flag flying. So that's the plan, and it's been quite successful, in fact.
What are people in Palestine saying about this? It seems akin to the notion of a Bantustan that people like Hanan Ashrawi and others have talked about. Are they pretty cognizant of what's being done?
It's obvious what's going on. And so, you know, the Palestinians aren't too concerned about this disengagement, which is largely symbolic for their lives. You know, there's still 720 checkpoints and various obstacles in the West Bank alone, which block movement for Palestinians from one village to the next. People still can't visit their families in the West Bank. You know, I've sat with families and they've pointed to their family homes only a kilometer away, and they can't visit their family in those areas. So I don't think disengagement from Gaza is a significant element for the vast majority of Palestinians. However, it's worth noting that the Israelis in the Gaza Strip control about 50% of the territory of the Gaza Strip, which is essentially just refugee camps, people living in really deplorable conditions. And so there will be a finite amount of aid will be opened up. The waterfront will be opened up. People that live in the refugee camps right along the ocean can't access the Mediterranean Sea, which is right in front of their eyes, because it's blocked by Israeli soldiers. There will be a certain modicum of relief for the Gaza Strip, but nobody's taking this very seriously. Everybody here knows that Sharon's plan is to reinforce the West Bank, and that's the goal. And you know, it's only in North America where these things are considered controversial or what have you. Here, it's very simple, and you know, one day living here is enough to show you that a lot has to change before the Palestinians are going to be a solution. Like I said, 700 plus checkpoints make freedom of movement virtually impossible in this area, and that's what people are concerned about. Believe it or not, if you talk to Palestinians on the street, it's not the tanks and the F-16s that they're concerned about, as much as it is the simple fact that they can't move from one area to the next, and they can't visit their family, there's no ability to work. Unemployment is 60% in the West Bank and virtually 100% in the Gaza Strip. It's about 9%, and when you take away people working in markets or these kind of things, you have essentially total unemployment, lack of opportunity, lack of movement, lack of ability to see the prospects for the future. And so something like the disengagement is seen as a good step if it's followed by the 450,000 other settlers that are living in illegally occupied territory, 200,000 of them in East Jerusalem and 250,000 of them in the West Bank.
I guess what you're talking about, it was outlined pretty clearly. Dov Weissglass, Ariel Sharon's top advisor, one of them, in 2004 told Haaretz that, quote, the disengagement is actually formaldehyde. It supplies the amount of formaldehyde that is necessary, so there will not be a political process with the Palestinians.
Well, essentially what they mean, what he means, and this is Dov Weissglass, who is the Karl Rove to Ariel Sharon, and putting it in formaldehyde means essentially making a unilateral move which the world can then applaud. Well, behind the back, what's going on is what I said, the reinforcement of the settlements in the West Bank, which are where the most important areas for the Zionist project are, not in the Gaza Strip. And the key difference between disengagement and what I would call a replacement or a redeployment, what's happening is the settlers are leaving the Gaza Strip and by and large moving into settlements in illegally occupied territory in the West Bank. And the army, no, there's been no indication that the army is going to be leaving the Gaza Strip. They surround the Gaza Strip, which is also surrounded by a massive fence with sniper towers all the way around it. And so, it's a relocation of the settlers and a potential redeployment of the military. But in any case, the military is completely surrounding the Gaza Strip. And as we've read in little tidbits in the media, there's potential that they'll be going in whenever they want and with pure impunity, as they always do. There's no exit points for the Gaza Strip into foreign territory that aren't controlled by Israel. The Palestinians, much to the contrary of how people in North America see it, have nothing that resembles a state. They're much more like a ghetto. They're just ghettos inside an Israeli state. They have no control over their borders. They have no control over movement. They have no control over their airspace. And none of that stands to change. The port in the Gaza Strip, which would be the Palestinian access for goods and services into the Palestinian area of Gaza, is going to be completely controlled by the Israelis. The sea is controlled by the Israelis. So, yeah, it's a pretty minor move that's happening here in the Gaza Strip. And if people could know this kind of thing in North America, I think there'd be a lot different perspective on what's going on, because it's filling the media here, this disengagement, and it's exactly what Sharon intended, to have this look like a gesture of peace, make it look like Israel is a state looking for peace, and in reality what it is it's simply a well-planned move to reinforce the most important settlement, namely the 450,000 illegal settlers living in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and sacrificing 7,000 settlers living in the Gaza Strip. The Israelis, the right-wing Israelis that are against this, believe that this is just a crack in the dam. That if one settler is removed, then what's to say that two or three won't be removed? And this is the idea. They view themselves as sticking their fingers in the cracks in the dam, if you will, because they believe that once they set a precedent for withdrawing, that who knows where it will end. But from Sharon's point of view, they're trying to create the chaos that's surrounding this disengagement, the lack of organization, the lack of planning, all these things, and nothing has been determined yet on the ground what's going to happen once this disengagement takes place. Very few settlers, only a handful, have actually moved out of the Gaza Strip, despite the fact that it's only is supposed to happen in about 10 days from now. The strip is supposed to be empty. So they're making it confusing and difficult, and these demonstrations actually work in Sharon's favor. They give an idea of a democratic state. They give an idea that he's making painful concessions for peace, when in reality what he's doing is reinforcing the occupation in the West Bank and East Jerusalem.
It's interesting. One thing that's been pretty clear and been heavily reported in the Western media is that Hamas is framing the pullout as a victory for the resistance, saying their militant tactics forced Israel out of Gaza. Is there any truth to this? And is anybody on the ground that you've talked to taking these kinds of claims from Hamas and maybe to a lesser degree Islamic Jihad with any seriousness?
Well, there's no doubt that Hamas has a significant role in Palestinian society, particularly in the Gaza Strip. Beyond resistance, their ability to control the social infrastructure on the ground is really important. And you know, they feed children, they have hospital programs, they have school programs. All these things are very significant. Hamas is not simply a resistance movement. However, you know, it must be said that the death of Israeli soldiers is something that really contributed to this pullout. You know, people, like I said, don't want to have their soldiers dying to protect settlers who are living a good life in the Gaza Strip. And so, sure, the rockets that, you know, the makeshift rockets that Hamas fired, the persistent resistance that they've put up through the last 5 years of intifada is a very important element in why Israel is pulling out. However, there's other more important elements as well, and namely that the Israelis have used all the water in Gaza. There's no more water left in the Gaza Strip. The settlers who use about 400% of the water have taxed it, in compared to the Palestinians, have taxed the water resources. And the situation is really untenable from an infrastructural standpoint. And so, you know, these are important elements, just as important as the resistance. But there's no doubt that Hamas has taken a significant role in this uprising. They're not just an underground shadowy terrorist network as they're proclaimed in North America. One of the reasons why Mahmoud Abbas, the leader of the Palestinian Authority, has postponed elections here in Palestine is because there's a good chance that Hamas will win a democratic election in this state, statewide. And so, yeah, you know, it must be said, they play a significant role, and they're not just simply, you know, a marginal fringe terrorist group that doesn't represent the Palestinian people.
Finally, John, before I let you go, do you have any hope for the situation as it stands right now?
You know, just traveling throughout the last 2 weeks, you know, it takes to get from Ramallah to Jerusalem, which is about 15 kilometers, takes sometimes 2 hours. You know, you have to pass 2 and 3 checkpoints. The wall is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's unbelievable. 8-meter-high concrete wall, completely encircling Palestinian areas. You know, something like hope is difficult to have. There's nothing more vulgar than a false sense of hope from somebody who has a passport and who can come back to Canada anytime they want. The Palestinians here have shifted their hope to something quite different. And I interviewed a woman yesterday in a village that's being cut off by the wall, and I asked her if she was upset by this situation, and she said, "No, I'm just going to get married and forget about it. What can we do?" And you know, that Palestinians have living under this now for 57 years. The answer for a lot of them is, what can we do? They're almost underarmed militias stand no chance against the Israeli army, which takes $3 billion in American military aid every year. They have total control over the whole area, Israel does. It's very difficult to have something like hope. That being said, the spirit of the Palestinians is really something when you live here. You know, daily life continues. In any war zone, daily life continues. People are going to school. People are going to university. People are carrying on their life with significant resolve. And that's the thing that can create hope for people. You know, these are not a defeated people, much like the Israelis say. Moshe Yaalon said that we have to treat the Palestinians to the understanding, to sear their conscience, that they're a defeated people. But I can tell you firsthand from being here, they're not a defeated people at all. And I don't know if that's the same thing as hope, but it is significant. It's a significant thing to look upon when you're surrounded by nothing but doom and gloom here, for sure. There's not a lot of indications of hope. You know, the wall is really... you know, it's really unbelievable that these people are going to be living for the next 20 years. The formaldehyde that Delphi's glass speaks of is really an 8-meter high wall that surrounds all the Palestinian areas and prevents movement from anywhere. So that really is the formaldehyde. It buys Israel another generation to figure out what they're going to do with the 3.5 million Palestinians that live amongst the Israelis here in what the Israelis call Eretz Israel, or what everybody knows as historic Palestine.
John Elmer, reporting from Ramallah. I want to thank you for being here, and we'll be following this story closely.
Thanks, Chris. Sorry about the reception. The Israelis dig up all the permanent ground telephone lines during the invasions, and so everybody has to use cell phones, and you have to just do what you can.
Well, keep on keeping on, brother.
Thanks, Chris.
That was John Elmer, former CKDU journalist reporting from Palestine. We'll be keeping continued tabs on the Gaza pullout and other issues in the Middle East with Elmer as our correspondent. So stay tuned to CKDU 97.5 FM. Taking it to the man and doing what the mainstream would never do. Here's a little bit of David Rovix coming at you in the morning. We'll have more news, weather, and an interview with the coordinator of the Dalhousie Women's Center coming up next. So stay tuned. Station with the most, CKDU.